Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Well, thank you for joining us, and Happy New Year, everyone. We're welcoming our 2014 with our first show of the new year, and we're thrilled that you're joining us. Today, we're going to have a more and more common problem that most of us are dealing with out there. We're going to be talking about computer vision syndrome. And we all know that the computer screen is a common tool used in the workplace and at home and when we just interact in daily life. The American Optometry Association reports that in America, workers spend long hours looking at computer screens. And the Vision Council in 2012 reported that 70% of Americans will experience some kind of eye strain from looking at digital devices every year. And it's not just the adults. We have over 60 million kids in school now working on digital devices, not including TVs, for greater than 1 hour a day. That affects school performance, academic, sports, and everything else. So computer eye strain and computer vision syndrome will be a very interesting topic for us today. It's actually the first computer-related health complaint. And with me today, I have one of our local Atlanta experts, Dr. Mark Lay. Dr. Lay, welcome.
Hello.
And let me tell you a little bit about him. He got his Doctor of Optometry from the State University of New York College of Optometry. He completed his internship at SUNY and residency at Salisbury VA in North Carolina. He's been a volunteer with Optometric Issues in Lima, Peru, so traveled and kind of gave back to the community. Congratulations for that.
Well, thank you.
And now he's in private practice at Georgia Eye Physicians and Surgeons here in Atlanta. So we're happy to have you today. And I understand that when you did your research from your training, you actually did a lot of research and specialized in this computer vision syndrome field.
Yeah, in addition to the clinical work, I enjoyed research at that time when I was in my training. And certain things always stand out to me. And I like to demystify what certain people don't really understand well as practitioners, and also, of course, educating my patients. Mm-hmm. And one of those topics that comes up is this, I think, a pretty vague term, but computer vision syndrome.
Mm-hmm. So the like collection of things we'll talk about.
Right, exactly.
Well, tell us how you got to be interested in optometry.
Well, I do enjoy dealing with people, answering their problems, and significantly impacting quality of life, and that's in a face-to-face way. I get to do that every day with my patients, so I just really enjoy that.
It probably, of all the senses, vision has to be right up there in terms of how we process
everyone
our
in my
life.
Every patient of mine says, you know, if I had to pick one thing, sometimes, you know, they order their senses in front of me and tell me what would be the most important. Vision usually comes up at the top.
It comes up top, too. I know when, too, you have a problem with your vision and you correct it, it can be life-changing.
Absolutely. I get that very often, which is extremely rewarding.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure it is. So let's kind of jump into computer vision syndrome, and let's talk about how prevalent. You heard me talking a little bit about how many people are affected, and I saw another thing that said healthcare experts report if you're looking at a computer screen or digital device for greater than 2 hours a day, you have about a 90% chance of developing some kind of eye strain. Would you agree with that?
The numbers are very high.
High.
The studies,
surprisingly high. But
yeah.
I think how much I spend on a computer a day.
Yeah, what I usually look at it for that number is usually, I mean, three hours is what I've read from some mm-hmm. studies. And it looks at also the criterion for what you consider to have eye strain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, usually that's a pretty good cutoff where most people, the majority of this, let's say, will have some sort of symptoms at that time frame mm-hmm. after they're using three. And that's consecutive hours.
Yeah, I did a little digging and I saw something like 10 million visits to eye healthcare professionals mm-hmm. per year.
That's
which
right.
is That's a lot. That's like 5% of the population.
Yeah, it's something we really need to be addressing at the issue. Right. And we can't just use previous methods of treatment mm-hmm. To manage this issue. Mm-hmm. We really have to investigate this and work in a different perspective.
So do you see differences in gender? Like, do you see more men than women? Or
well, one component we'll kind of drive into, I think, about computer vision syndrome is the dry eye component, mm-hmm. Which is more prevalent in the female population. And there's several reasons for that. So on that side of it, yes, there is there's a slight gender bias.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what it is. So what are the typical causes and what are the signs and symptoms?
Right.
Let's start with the causes first.
Well, yeah, so kind of stepping back and looking at what a syndrome is, I mean, we hear that term all the time, but it really is, when you talk about a syndrome, it's a clinically recognizable set of these signs, symptoms, and characteristics. And that could be for any syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, it's not terribly enigmatic. Some conditions, we look at them, we really just don't understand the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of times when we hear syndrome, that's what that's associated with. But when we talk about computer vision syndrome, there's some clearly identifiable situations and things that we can manage. And like you said, it's over 90% of individuals. And what people are really going to notice is strain around the eyes, difficulty focusing, blurred vision, sometimes double vision, and certainly headaches. Now, of course, they can be caused from many other things, but if they're associated with computer use, that's when the term computer vision syndrome is usually utilized.
Mm-hmm. And that's not just a computer. That's devices, looking at devices. Like
absolutely.
Kids gaming, that's kind of any digital device that you're staring at.
Right, unfortunately, the term computer vision is not all-encompassing enough, I think, because obviously our world has moved to tablets and many other devices besides that, you know, that monitor sitting on a desktop.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that there's kind of two schools of thoughts around looking at the problem. Mm-hmm. One is actually looking at your workstation and where the device is and how it's lit and how the environment, kind of environmental issues.
Right.
And then another one is actually the corrective lenses or devices or whatever. So let's start with the workstation part. What is all considered in the environmental part of contributing to computer vision syndrome?
Yeah, and we'll talk about that. Also, I think that I'd add a third section on that as well. And because some of us come to the table with, if you put two different people in a situation, some of us come to the table with certain eye conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that ends up opening up a lot of other possibilities for what could be going on. But addressing the environmental side of things, we have a lot of choices when our workstation to increase monitor height or viewing distance, certain lighting techniques, which we can discuss in a little bit, that I think would help. And also just how we adjust the monitor properties on the monitor and our display terminal, which are some things that I was researching. Also, work habits. They're really important because a lot of us we just do what we need to do to get the work done.
Mm-hmm.
But time slips
away.
Yeah.
I know when I'm at the computer, I'll think, oh, I even have a program that pops up and says, time to move, and I'll override it and say 10 more minutes and then it's an hour.
Yeah, we need to pay attention to that because we'll go into some of the physiology and that's really important to make
sure.
Well,
let's talk about that now.
Okay, well, the way the eye works when we're looking at something up close, it's called accommodation. That's our focusing system. And that's controlled by a ring of muscle inside the eye that surrounds the lens in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And that muscle has to contract to allow us to focus up close. The problem is, though, it wasn't designed to sustain near focusing for hours and hours at a time. We're meant to look at something briefly up close, and then we would be able to focus again in the distance. But just imagine having to, you know, the analogy here would be, if I give you a 50-pound weight, you could probably lift it up once and hold that and then for about 5 seconds. But if I even give you a 5-pound weight and ask you to hold it for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, that's not possible.
Right.
And so
that is a good analogy.
Yeah, for some people, the muscle literally goes into spasm.
For the work of the eye, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you get the spasm of the muscle, and it's just very uncomfortable. So, I mean, if I were to tell you that situation, the obvious answer there is to take regular breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is this interesting guideline that had come out. Dr. Sheedy, which was a colleague of mine that we worked together and on some research, he discussed this 20-20-20 guideline.
I saw that, yeah.
It's an interesting rule or guideline to try to avoid some of the issues. What you're trying to do is set up a time, 20 minutes. Every 20 minutes, you want to take 20 seconds to look out in the distance greater than 20 feet. So you're just every 20, I usually say 30 minutes to my patients, 20 to 30 minutes, and just take about a half a minute. So it's not really affecting your daily flow because it's such a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look out further than 20 feet, optically speaking, that fully relaxes the muscle in the eye, allows the physiology of the eye to reset.
And so less chance of spasm. You're giving your eye a break. You're just taking a break.
It's the most inexpensive and easy way to find relief from this issue sometimes.
So about every 20 minutes, look 20 feet away for at least 20 seconds That's the 320s.
That's right.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, pretty easy.
That's very good. That's a good rule of thumb.
You don't even need to see me for that one. So
that's the
first thing you need to make sure you're doing. I think everybody needs to do that. There's no exception to that.
Mm-hmm. And then what about the workstation itself? Let's kind of, you talked about making modifications both in terms of the environment and then separately on the device itself.
Right. Well, okay. So in the environment, lighting, that's the most general thing. A lot of times we can't control all aspects of lighting, but in an ideal world, we have evenly diffused light, you know, louvered lighting. Mm-hmm. Fluorescent lighting is okay as long as it's diffused properly. Ideally, there's no lighting. You don't want bright sources that are going to reflect off of the computer screen. Mm-hmm. So overhead lighting is ideal when it's diffuse. And the other thing is on the surface of the desk itself, you'd like a matte surface. Mm-hmm. A highly gloss desk or things like that tend to cause more reflection. And also on the monitor itself, you can have an anti-glare monitor or a mm-hmm. matte finish on the monitor as well. Mm-hmm.
So making sure that the lighting – well, I'm thinking of the cube farms that we have where there's fluorescent lights in like big office complex.
Right.
That really they can't plug in a desk lamp or something.
Right.
So really the anti-glare would be your recommendation.
Yeah, at that point.
Because it's really the glaring surface angles that are making your eyes
You can always
adjust.
Control the angle of the monitor. You know, you can't control a lot of other things. But if you are just paying attention to the fact that there's a light reflecting off that monitor – just shifting it a few degrees can make mm-hmm. a big difference. Mm-hmm.
And what is the distance from the monitor to our eyes that is like normal?
Yeah, 30 inches would be average. There are a lot of different ranges you're mm-hmm. going to find out there. But ANSI has the standards organization, has American National Standards mm-hmm. on this, and they say 30 inches is a good guideline for that.
Okay, that sounds good. So really look at your matte finish on your computer, mm-hmm. look at the lighting that you have, modify it if you need to, change the angle of the device to be easy and about 30 inch and the height. Oh, so what's the proper angle? Should we be looking straight ahead at the monitor or down a little bit?
Yeah, I find it completely useless when people say you should have it 22 degrees below horizontal. That means nothing to me mm-hmm. sitting at a computer.
Right.
Just generally speaking, I think the eye line when you're looking straight ahead should fall within the top third of the monitor.
Okay.
So that means the monitor is slightly below. You know, it's down about 25 degrees or so.
Okay.
And so if a lot of people, when I look at them, when they look straight ahead, they're kind of looking at the center of that monitor as a bullseye.
Right.
And that's not good.
I've even gone through workspaces and seen people elevate the monitor.
Right.
Where they're actually looking maybe up.
Right. And there are certain situations that have been for certain jobs that have to do that, and that finds mm-hmm. I find that to be very uncomfortable. In fact, in my exam room, we have computer display terminals to show patients their retinal imaging, and I can't do any work in there actually on the computer other than show the pictures because they're kind of high up.
Okay,
and that's very uncomfortable to sustain. That's mm-hmm. not good ergonomically for the neck.
Very neck.
And then also, though, there's a whole other side of this in terms of the physiology of the eye. When you are looking up, your eye is more exposed to air. Think about it, if you look down, you only have about half of the eye's surface. And when you start to look up, more of that surface is exposed. So you exacerbate ongoing issues like dryness.
Mm-hmm.
And so just simply lowering the monitor can be very helpful.
So since we're talking about dryness, and that was one mm-hmm. of the things you brought up already, what about blinking? I read that when you're focusing on a computer, you blink like around one-third or significantly less than you would
40%. Is generally what I'll tell my patients. 40% less blinking. And that's another thing that you can't really remember to blink when you're focusing on the task. That's why you don't blink in the first place. So taking the breaks helps. Lubricating drops do help. I mean, you'll hear that all the time, artificial tears and things like that. And for someone who doesn't have dry eye but just dryness when mm-hmm. they're using the computer, mm-hmm. something like a preservative-free lubricant is sufficient, and that does the job for most of us.
So keep an eye. Artificial tears at your desk will help you.
And there's so many options out there without going into specific names. Mm-hmm. My recommendation is if you're finding something that says it's preservative-free, mm-hmm. usually that's a good quality, good caliber lubricant that's something you can use.
So preservative-free artificial tears, mm-hmm, whatever
absolutely.
Brand of your choice.
There. Yeah.
That sounds good. Now, back to the device. We talked about the contrast and the brightness on the actual device mm-hmm. you're working on.
Right.
So what would be like a good setting so that it's not too dimly lit so you're straining? A lot of people don't even realize you can make modifications, I think, in point size.
Yeah.
I'm thinking especially of older people that aren't really used to customizing their devices. They just get it, open it, and use it.
Yeah. What I do for anything personally when I purchase a device is I Google this color calibration, and you'll find some websites that come up that'll let you actually go through and adjust the brightness using the plus and minus on the front of the mm-hmm. monitor to make it so it's bright enough that you're getting the best possible contrast but without washing out colors. If you just take it up to 100, you're going to end up causing more issues because mm-hmm. Blacks become kind of grayish, mm-hmm. which isn't ideal at all. So going through taking the 5 minutes to go through the, I call it color calibration, is actually very useful. And also on Windows display terminals, there's actually a font calibration tool, which is extremely useful because they started realizing this, the manufacturers and the operating systems, and they allow us to do that now. So all of us might not even realize that we have that ability. If you just go into search and type in font calibration, then you can set that up as well, which helps very much.
And then so the brightness you can change, the point size you can change.
Right. Make it bigger.
And the color contrast you can change.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, taking size into account, you mentioned that. The font, there's a lot of options when it comes to making things larger on certain screens, and I don't mind that. But if a patient of mine is having to make things abnormally large to see larger than their colleagues on the computer,
that probably indicates
an issue. Yeah, exactly.
Very good. All right, we've talked a little bit about workstation adjustments and device adjustments. And we've gone into a little bit of behaviors like the 20/20/20 and actually blinking and resting your eyes. Is there anything else you can think of in terms of modifications?
In terms of the environment, is that what you're... Mm-hmm. Yeah, there really isn't much else in terms of without actually purchasing a bigger screen and things like that. That always helps. And to be honest, with the cost of displays having gone down, that's always a good option to consider. A lot of the other factors fall intrinsic to the patient, so it's not as much environment. So those are the things we can talk about as well.
Yeah, so let's move on and talk then about the patient and what they can, their actual eyesight and devices they may have. So we were talking off air before we came online a little bit about people that wear contact lenses, but they really weren't designed for computer use, or they wear bifocals or trifocals that weren't designed for computer use. So let's kind of dive into that whole issue of patients that don't wear devices, will they need computer glasses? What are computer glasses? I know my husband normally does not wear glasses, but at his annual checkup, he was complaining about eye strain. His doctor said, you need computer glasses. We never heard of them.
Right. Yeah, and when you start out looking at this, it's a big topic because we talked about you mentioned actually one thing stepping back, the program that reminds you to take breaks.
Right.
Do you have a name for the one you use? Do you know?
I don't even know the name of it. It was, the worker installed it and it just pops up on my computer.
Yeah, there are a lot of different programs out there and there are free ones. So I usually find that it's not worth paying for anything. But iDefender is a really nice one. I have no relation to it, but it'll come up and you can set how often it'll remind you. But when you look at, when I talk about patients, I talk to my patients about this, that's the visual hygiene, we call it, visual hygiene aspect of it, and that's taking the breaks. But using corrective lenses, as you mentioned, your husband has, those can be helpful for certain people. I like to start, first of all, a lot of people don't even know that they have a prescription, just haven't been checked for it. And a slight prescription for a lot of us makes no bit of difference during our everyday activities. But when we're working, that can make a huge bit of difference. Again, going back to the analogy of a slight weight, carrying a little bit of prescription around with your, having to see a little blurry might not matter too much. But when you have to do it all day, looking at small typeface, that can make a big difference. So just looking for any prescription, even low, far, or nearsighted prescription can make a very big difference. And anti-fatigue lenses, that's actually a term I'll use because a lot of people have come out with these lenses, manufacturers, and I think they have a huge value because that's what I use when I'm on the computer for extended periods of time.
So what are those exactly?
Anti-fatigue lenses actually, for some of us, don't have any near or far-sighted correction in them at all. It just has a gradual prescription at the top to reduce the need for you to have to focus and see.
So that's so kind of helps your eye.
Yeah, it helps your eye do the job. Exactly, when you're focusing up close. So again, we're not meant to look at things.
For near work.
You just put those on and they work in the office or when you're reading. When you just leave them at the office. I tell patients, don't even take them in the car with you. You don't need them to drive or anything like that. They're really just to help you see up close.
So are those over the counter or are those you see an eye care professional? Where do you get
those? Usually are prescription because even... Again, going back to the idea that all of us have a slight prescription, so that's incorporated.
You need to know your baseline. See a healthcare professional, know your baseline.
Right. And that's what gives you the prescription for the top of the anti-fatigue lens.
Okay.
So,
All right. That sounds good. Now, another thing I'm interested in your opinion on is I was doing the research for the show. I read that compared to like 20 years ago, we as a nation in America are getting more and more myopic.
Right.
As we're getting all this computer. I don't know if it's related or not, or it's other things, but...
Right.
Putting two and two together, it seems like computers are here in the last 20 years. We're all doing a lot more near work in the last 20 years.
Right.
What's your opinion?
I had colleagues and some of my professors when we're studying myopia. We talk about nearsightedness. It's something that almost seems mundane. We just correct it with glasses. But the real question I think you're asking, and the most important thing, is why are we nearsighted?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why is it going up?
You look at Asian countries, the rates are very different of nearsightedness, much, much higher than here. We don't really know why. That's actually the answer. Why nearsightedness? We have a better idea of why that's occurring, and some people believe that that's driven by near activities. I certainly think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You take certain people with genetic predisposition,
on top of it.
Yeah, and then it just accelerates. It's like just flooring the accelerator. Mm-hmm. Some people don't have that same drive to become more nearsighted, so near activities doesn't affect them in the same way.
Now, another thing I'm wondering before we go into more advanced prescriptions and computer work or near work is if I'm using those anti-fatigue, if my eyes get dependent upon getting a little help.
Right. That's the biggest thing I hear, probably.
Now my eyes are having to work harder? I worry that if I need a prescription, I'm taking them on, putting them off. That in life, I'll start to need them.
Yeah, I get that all the time, and that's computers aside. I hear that all the time. What we're doing with the lens, if you are nearsighted, the only reason you're nearsighted is the eye is just a very small amount larger than normal.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking on the order of a tenth of a millimeter, so not visibly larger.
Mm-hmm.
But optically speaking, that makes a huge difference. It makes you really blurry in the distance, and you can see up close just fine. So when we put a lens in front of the eye, all it does is make the light focus on the back of the eye.
Mm-hmm.
It does not change the eye in any way.
I'm thinking if I'm exercising my eye muscle and then I let somebody help me not exercise, then I would get lazy.
Right. It wouldn't matter for the lenses. Now, it does matter. Interesting that you mentioned that. Working the eyes out in terms of therapy, that can make a difference with certain types of eye conditions.
Okay.
So there are certain conditions where lenses just won't do the job.
Okay, but in computer work and near vision, it's just a matter of focusing the light, not actually exercising the optic.
There are exceptions to that.
Okay.
There are exceptions to that. With some of us, we have an inability to keep the eyes converged. What I mean by that is pointed in at a target for a sustained period of time. And when that happens, what we need to do is work on convergence, and there are certain therapeutic exercises that can be done for that.
Mm-hmm.
Glasses don't help that as much. So that's one of the exceptions to the rule when we talk about correcting prescriptions.
So are there eye exercises that would be helpful for computer vision syndrome or not really?
Yeah, in some patients there are. So that does get pretty complicated depending on the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about, I mentioned convergence insufficiency. That's a lack of turning the eyes in. There's also accommodative insufficiency. That's when our eyes can't focus properly up close. And those sort of conditions usually require, I need to understand what severity is there, and then we'll usually use glasses as an adjunct to vision therapy to remediate that sort of condition.
Okay, so possible. So again, go back and start when you have problems with a healthcare professional. You get your baseline, then they can help you from
Right. Because, therapy can be beneficial, but it's not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
When we're doing therapy, we're teaching the eyes how to work together more efficiently. Some people think when we do therapy, we're strengthening the muscles around the eyes and things like that. It's really more a matter of the neuromotor connections there.
Okay. Let's move on then and talk about people that come to you that have prescriptions, but then when they were in, I'm kind of curious, when they come in for an exam, do you ask them how much time do you spend on the computer? So you account for that when you write a prescription for their glasses or lenses?
Yeah, I'm usually having to discuss that because it might catalyze me to recommend
change
certain
something.
Things. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes certain patients of mine, I know they're working under, mechanics are a good example because they have a task where they're looking in a very different direction. They're looking up to fix things.
Right.
Whereas computer programmers, they're looking straight ahead, and I'm going to recommend a totally different prescription for them.
Okay.
So definitely it can change dramatically what I'm recommending. Also the type of prescription and the type of lens, because every lens is made differently from different manufacturers.
Okay.
So most people think of a progressive, which is the type of lens, a no-line bifocal, where you go from the top of the distance and then the bottom has some reading prescription. But that is very different depending on the manufacturer of the lens.
Mm-hmm.
So that really matters, and I'm usually gearing my recommendations based on what they're telling me and what they do during the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then so what do we do for people that have you know, got a prescription, but they didn't have, or maybe their computer use is increasing, and now they're rolling their head and they're adjusting and all that kind of stuff. Just go back in and be rechecked.
But yeah, sometimes yes. If I've seen a patient of mine and I know that their lifestyle has changed, and we have all the information we need, I don't even need to see them again. We can use the information we have to design a new prescription. But certainly for someone I've never seen, I don't really know where we're coming from.
Right.
We have to look at everything from a new perspective because everybody's different on this. So it's not like a one-size-fits-all sort of solution.
So what kind of questions do you ask them when they come in for that first baseline checkup about their computer work? What would make a difference?
What makes a difference is I have a lot of patients of mine who aren't at the computer 8 hours straight a day. Mm-hmm. They are people who have to go to meetings in the middle of the day, and then they have to come back and use their computer for mm-hmm. a couple of hours. And so it's more of a dynamic mm-hmm. Situation, or managers are a really good example mm-hmm. because they'll have to sit for a stint of 4 or 5 hours at the computer, and then they have to go out and
talk to the people,
talk to employees mm-hmm. and handle problems like that. So what I would recommend in that case would be a different style of lens, a different style of progressive lens. And you mentioned the computer glasses, mm-hmm. but even that, there are different styles of computer glasses. Mm-hmm. So some are meant for people who are at the computer all day. Some are meant for people who are more migratory during the day and they're mm-hmm. in and out of the office.
See, I thought that was like one thing.
No.
Like those are computer
glasses.
That's
even a subcategory. It really okay. kind of breaks down. And the reason, one of the things that always comes up for people, they ask me, why can't I just get a stronger prescription?
Right.
And stronger is kind of a difficult term, because if some people have if they were looking up close all day, they need something different than someone mm-hmm. who's looking around. Because if I give you the strongest prescription possible, you wouldn't be able to see further away than the page you're holding, mm-hmm. which would not work for a lot of people that mm-hmm. I know. So it becomes a difficult question to answer without knowing what that person does. Mm-hmm. That's why we have to ask so many of those questions in the exam room.
Mm-hmm. So you take a pretty thorough assessment
right.
in terms of their lifestyle.
Exactly.
That's really to know critical. What's going to work.
And hobbies, too. Because, you know, a lot of
what
we
that's
do.
That's true. I think of fly fishermen here yeah. in Georgia tying those little knots everywhere.
Right.
And yeah.
right.
Yeah, we have all kinds of variety, I guess, in our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay, well, we talked a little bit about anything else on visual hygiene. We talked about moisturizing. We talked about blinking. We talked about...
That's pretty thoroughly covers it, I'd say.
Okay, very good. Well, one of the next things I want to talk about is kids. Mm-hmm. So we've talked a little bit about adults, but one of the things that I think complicates the issue with kids is their eyes are still developing.
Right. And we don't, this comes back to a lack of knowledge in the research that we currently have. Mm-hmm. What I know about, when I talk to my patients, we're trying to prevent the problem of nearsightedness, because there are significant consequences, not only just visually blurry and having to wear glasses, but medically speaking. Severe nearsightedness can cause a lot of issues in terms of ocular health. Mm-hmm. When the eye becomes, you can imagine a slightly larger eye, it stretches the retina and it can cause holes and tears. And mm-hmm. that's a very severe consequence. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen to but a small percentage of mm-hmm. patients. But if we can prevent nearsightedness or the worsening of nearsightedness, that's a very big and important step, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that avoids, like I said, more than just having to wear glasses or contacts, but more significant medical interventions. Mm-hmm. So when I'm talking to patients of mine that, and their parents under the age of 18, it's a very dynamic time for the eye's development. We have to be even more critical about what visual hygiene, the role of visual hygiene, and also other ways to prevent development of nearsightedness, because mm-hmm. there are a lot of things that are out there and treatments for actually nearsightedness that have more advantages than glasses or standard contacts. Mm-hmm. Certain contacts that are used overnight, they're special contacts, are like a retainer lens, and they prevent nearsightedness from developing and becoming worse and worse. So in my patients, my younger patients, they're on devices all the time. Their nearsightedness is becoming worse and worse. What I'll discuss with them is this option. It's called orthokeratology. So mm-hmm. it's quite a mouthful. But orthokeratology is what it is actually a retainer contact lens, mm-hmm. just like a retainer.
Do you sleep in it?
You sleep overnight, and then you take it out in the morning, you see clearly.
Okay.
So imagine if you're nearsighted, you put this lens in overnight, mm-hmm. and you wake up, and you take it out, and then you see 20/20. Mm-hmm. It's a very unique thing, and not a lot of
fun. I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, I get that all the time. Yeah,
now we're educating people. Everybody, listen up.
Yeah, this is something. It's definitely been around for a while now. Mm-hmm. Actually, there are a couple of different systems that are FDA approved for overnight wear.
Is it used more in kids because you're trying to prevent it than adults?
Yeah, this okay. Absolutely. Most of my patients that are in orthokeratology are using them overnight, and they're under 18.
Okay,
from 8 years to 18 years old.
Okay.
That's the ideal range. I've worked with some patients as young as 6 or 7.
Okay.
But and as old as maybe 70s, actually I have one patient who's 72 who does orthokeratology.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, it's actually for any age, but that's usually
ideal.
Yeah,
trying to preserve your near vision, I guess. Okay, so other considerations with kids. Do you see breakpoints at eye development? Like we see these kind of issues in like school-age children, but as they get older, you know, toward the teen years, there's changes, anything like that?
Most of the issues in visual development as a whole, in terms of we think of things like color and depth perception, mm-hmm. those are developed rather young.
Mm-hmm.
But more nuanced aspects of the visual system, like focusing and mm-hmm. convergence and divergence, those continue to develop. And there's not really a clear – you asked about breakpoint. There really isn't. There really is not one clear defining point. But it's something that if we become overly taxed with near activities
mm-hmm. –
it becomes more of an issue, and it can lead to avoidance of certain tasks. So I've had so many cases of patients of mine who were very intelligent, and they're perfectly capable of doing the work, but their eyes are stopping them. And mm-hmm. that's one of the bigger issues that comes up is people mm-hmm. patients who are limited by what their eyes can sustain in terms mm-hmm. of looking up close and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the treatments are actually very similar,
mm-hmm.
but it's just a matter of, as parents, we have to pay attention to the fact that obviously sometimes children don't know when they're experiencing something that's a problem in terms of their eyes.
Because they think it's probably normal for them.
Right, and they just adapt
to it. They just adapt to it.
And then, unfortunately, one of the adaptations is just avoiding, avoidance. And that's not an adaptation we want any of our children to have.
Yeah, so I'm putting on my parent hat. I'm wondering, do you have any guidelines? Like, I would assume that a child cannot handle the same focusing time
right.
that an adult would whose eyes are fully developed.
Right. And when we're working on a computer for productivity, mm-hmm. when we're doing that with the workforce, it is different than when we're doing it recreationally.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the studies will show us that the amount of effort and focus that we have to apply is less
mm-hmm.
When we're working recreationally.
Mm-hmm.
But even knowing that, we shouldn't be on the computer for more than 2 hours at a time, in my opinion. That's when we should be taking – and that's not a 20-second break at 2 hours. That's more like a 20, 30-minute break.
Okay.
And that's for a lot of reasons. Certainly visually is one of the most mm-hmm. important because we are younger, we can focus more and we'll over-focus. So it sort of puts the system in overdrive, which can lead to more issues.
Okay. Any other tips for parents in terms of just preserving that – we talked about the therapy that you were talking about, the orthokeratology, but devices
and
or
everything
computers.
Everything we were discussing for adults applies.
As far as the environment, same mm-hmm. for the kids. Mm-hmm. So set the device, make sure you're...
Yeah, I mean, realizing that, of course, you know, children, because they're going to fall in a much lower place in the monitor, and that makes it a lot more difficult for them. So don't try to be cognizant of that when we're working on the devices.
Okay.
And, you know, children will tend to slump more and to become really close to mm-hmm. devices and TVs and things mm-hmm. like that.
So they lay on the bed. They have 2 inches from their nose.
We have to reinforce good working distance. And like I said, at least for adults on a computer, it's 30 inches. For children, especially when you mentioned just room reading,
mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that the distance from the page is the distance from our hand to our elbow. So for a child, that's a much smaller distance. But from the tip of our knuckles mm-hmm. to our elbow, that's the distance that a child's eye should be from the page. No closer.
Okay. What do you see anything or do any work with school teachers in terms of devices? Because I would guess that, well, we have gaming that a lot of kids are going to do recreationally. But I would say in school, kids are working more than they ever have been on devices also.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I don't have a direct – my observation is after they have usually had difficulty and they're coming to see me too much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would definitely feel that there's much more of a need for us to intervene on that side mm-hmm. of things when we're actually working with
devices. Educators.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and unfortunately, I think that there's a lot of practitioners like myself out there who are working on the reactive side of it, but mm-hmm. we need to be more proactive.
Yeah,
that's absolutely critical.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well, I want to dive into another topic here in terms of specialty populations like the kids, and that's workforce productivity.
Right.
And so I mentioned at the top of the show a little bit about how much we're on computers, but we really didn't get into how it affects work if people can't see or they're straining.
Right.
Can you just speak about that a little
Absolutely,
bit?
Yeah. So if we have – the simplest case would be we just have a slight prescription that's mm-hmm. uncorrected. And if that slows us down, which there have been some good studies that show 10 to 20% is a conservative estimate.
Mm-hmm.
If it slows us down, let's say 10%, that would mean – let's say I file insurance claims for a company and I'm –
I saw that. Was that the UAB study?
Yeah, that's exactly
it.
So if we file – and these aren't the numbers from the study exactly, mm-hmm. but just proportionally speaking – if it's 10% of patients, or I'm sorry, 10% productivity loss, mm-hmm. that would mean that if I was normally to file 100 claims in a specified period of time, I could file 110. And if you're just looking at this from a pure dollars and cents mm-hmm. standpoint,
bottom line,
that's a 10% improvement in mm-hmm. what an employee is doing. Not to mention the actual satisfaction of the employee because they can work mm-hmm. more happily. Mm-hmm. So both sides of that same coin are really critical to having employees produce more, but also be more just happier and effective mm-hmm. at their jobs. Mm-hmm. So that's, and it's for all those different reasons that we discussed that can cause that reduction in productivity. The UAB study looked at what we call refractive error, just any near or farsightedness or astigmatism mm-hmm. causing those issues. But anything that causes a drop in productivity like that because of the visual system is very important to have that corrected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even just reading people. I mean, I'm thinking not only of people that are like paper claims but if you misinterpret something, if you read, right. if you're blurry, it's going to slow you down.
Absolutely, or cause errors. You know, right. if people don't slow down to increase accuracy, they're going to increase error rates, and that causes
the accountants. Yeah.
Yeah,
it'll be big dollar mistakes there. Okay, very good. So, any thoughts? I was reading too. We were talking offline about. I was reading about the early beginnings of a trend that employers are considering computer vision benefits packages.
Right.
Like they would pay for the anti-glare screens. Like Lockheed, I know,
right.
pays for anti-glare screens. Or they might pay for the computer glasses or anything so that they're not having the liability and productivity issues.
Right. And I think a lot of the larger corporations are quickly realizing how critical it is to address these issues before they become more mm-hmm. of a problem. And that's part of being proactive, which I'm definitely happy to see that. And it's up to my patients to use those benefits when they're given. I mean, I have no way of really knowing that when I'm dealing with them. I'm going to make the same recommendations regardless. Mm-hmm. But I love to hear that because it's really making a tremendous change in the quality of life for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Well, believe it or not, we're almost done with our time together. But I want to leave the audience with a couple of things. Just I know that patients, we've talked a lot about statistics and studies and what you do, but patients remember success stories.
Right.
So are there any patients that come to mind where they came to you in one situation and you're able to help them? And like we've talked about, some life-changing help.
Yeah, I mean, I've had patients, and actually the thing about it is there's so many patients that I have that mm-hmm. I deal with this, it becomes a weekly thing, which is great. Mm-hmm. And so many more that I hear about indirectly mm-hmm. That are able to just enjoy what they do more mm-hmm. because they're able to function. And that not we talk about workplace a lot, but so much of this extends into our avocation and what we do in our off time. So that just drives to the quality of life issues. And I there are just so many cases. I wouldn't be able to drive down one or two, but mm-hmm. there are literally hundreds of people that I deal with every year that we're able to make a big, tremendous change with.
Okay, so we've given lots of little tidbits through the course of the show on if you don't really need intervention, here's some things you can do. If you do, get in to see a healthcare professional. But what are like your top three things that come to mind?
Well, I mentioned I do like the program, the software program that you can mm-hmm. get. That's
iDefender.
The iDefender. Mm-hmm. That doesn't
to set
make
on your
difference.
Computer to remind you.
Do make sure you have the monitor height is actually a really big one because, again, that drives back to a lot of other issues, and having that not too high or too low can make mm-hmm. a big difference, and that goes beyond just the eye side effects there. And the third thing would be getting any refractive correction taken care of. It's very straightforward, and it can make a rather large difference in, mm-hmm. in what you do every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we sometimes get in the habit when we're school age, we know we're going to get that visual exam every
right.
year, and we're going
right.
to get screened. But as we get adults, we're like, don't ask, don't tell, or absolutely. No news is good news, and we don't get in there to
right.
get our eye exams.
It's not that scary. Just come on in. We take care
yeah,
of it.
Sounds good. All right. And then I want to leave our show with the audience knowing a little bit more about your practice and how they can find you. So tell us about the practice and what you do and where you are and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're our practice is in Duluth. We are actually right on Pleasant Hill Road mm-hmm. and across the street from the Gwinnett Medical Center. So it's mm-hmm. pretty easy to find mm-hmm. us. We've just moved. We were inside the medical center building. So we have a little more space now, and I practice with Dr. Siegel, mm-hmm. and he's a cornea refractive specialist mm-hmm. and also performs cataract surgeries mm-hmm. as well. So we can take care of a wide host of things at our practice mm-hmm. for our patients.
Mm-hmm. And what about hours?
We are available 8 to 5, Monday through Friday.
Okay, and a phone number to reach the office?
678-584-0400.
Great, and a website?
That's www.georgiaeyephysicians.com.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We've appreciated your advice and your expertise today. It's been a topic I think we are hearing more about, living more about, and we unfortunately probably will continue. So you'll probably be doing well for a very long time, I would bet. And Happy New Year to you. And
thank you.
Thanks to all of you for listening. Also, please check our sponsor's website, www.healthgate.com, for any ways they can help you there too. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.